interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 438. I hope all that went smooth. We got to do some new flicking and clicking here to get everything switched over. And hopefully we'll get all that done. And again, if you have a broadcast that you may want to think about doing, I know Grimner was saying he can do it. He's got a little bit of work to do, but he is inviting us today. He did get online and invite us to remind you, if you have some content you want to tell people, the network is open. And remember here, COVID isn't a communicable disease. It's communicated taradiddle created by script. Who is the author? The plague of the duped and the dupable. And I am just dismayed to watch this thing roll out. I'm pausing, folks. Are you, the rest of you dismayed to watch this thing roll out? And it keeps rolling out, and it keeps working. And I'm asking people, it's big. I knew this was coming, but the amount of people that are now coming with the need to protect themselves is almost overwhelming, beyond my abilities. And so it's going to be very important for any of you with jobs and things to really start looking forward. I hope you pass this broadcast around. I offer a way to approach the problems for people that are employees. I showed you in one broadcast how to address yourselves to businesses as a customer. Now it's moving into the employment. As we find out, this thing is not stopping. They're going to try and make this proprietary disease in the world now mandatory. But listen very carefully. Those that are saying it's mandatory, they'll tell you that they don't have authority to do that. And so that's what I'm talking about. That's the hitch in the giddy up. That's the glitch in the matrix. You go in right there. And I've offered how you do that. And it's going to take those of you that are threatened with your jobs or whatever. You're going to have to do what I'm suggesting. Otherwise, I don't know what the answer is to that. And I don't know if I'm going to yet release the affidavit that I wrote, although it seems the only objection to it from a bar ass member that was given the document by someone who wanted to have an attorney review what that affidavit did in presenting someone's so-called exception to by way of religious conviction was that the affidavit was harsh. And so I kind of laughed out loud a bit on that. It's just harsh, folks. Shows you the Bar Association members have no clue and or they are willing to let the government run you down, and it's harsh when you resist. There was no substantive complaint about the affidavit, and so the problem I'm having now for y'all is because I've told you that most everybody doesn't understand how to address the officials. They don't understand the process. They really certainly don't understand what I bring. Some of you might have an idea after listening to me for a while. And the first responses of those using it, we got responses from the companies. And it was the anticipated response. In fact, that response is built into the affidavit. And it's the wrong response by the company, which means you now have two steps of advantage on them. However, the initial response by people who think they understand what they're doing and move way too fast was to do the wrong things. And so I'm starting to have to undo the wrong thing, to redo the right thing, and that's taking even more work. And the more people that are moving forward on it and think they know what's going on and not really reading what's going on, not really understanding what I've been talking to you for over a year and a half now about what the background of all this is, the first step that people do, steps that people do, are mistakes. And I've always said your mistakes can be undone, but when you don't know that you're making those mistakes, and then there's someone who's watching over you, so that you take your baby steps, and you're taking all the wrong steps, to get you back on the path is a lot of work. And so I'm a little bit concerned now as I see people responding in using this thing, that everybody does the wrong thing. And I've built into this affidavit, if people understood, that they would refer their employer when they respond to send every their responses in the mail, because inside that is I want to get the advantage, additional advantage on top of that, that when they return a fraud back, it's fraud, usually a fraudulent use of the mail. Instead, people are allowing themselves to be receiving email, which just has a whole bunch of other problems. It's too fast for people to think, actually. And it allows the employer to answer you, asking you the questions that they anticipated to that you failed to give, that they don't have the right to answer, and then you give them permission beyond what the affidavit says. It says they don't have authority. In a simple phone call, you undo the affidavit. And you take away your right to get them on fraudulent use of the mail. And so when I tell you I have a way of approaching all this, it's fairly integrated. And you really have to understand what I'm talking about. And it takes just a little bit to kind of get all your foundation together to start to see what it is. And so anyway, there's an affidavit. It's been deemed by a Bar Association member to be harsh. All it's doing, folks, is standing between you and an employer that's stealing your livelihood or wanting to make you proprietary product for a company, for a disease-making company to destroy your country. Take away all livelihoods, put you in austerity, do everything what Agenda 2030 was saying and everything to fulfill Agenda 21 and worse. Yeah, so I'm off my tabs again. Anyway, so as I've been trying to show you, I'm the harbinger behind the woodshed, folks. You can too. And if I'm wrong, demonstrate your non-fraudulent correctness. And that little point right there, causing someone to demonstrate their non-fraudulent correctness is essentially the key and core to this whole entire thing, given it is a fraud we're dealing with. And on many, many places. And this actually, as I look at this, this answers a lot of official impositions as I look through around. And we see the nonsensicalness of it all. I told you, as soon as you start seeing that, then you better consider whether or not you're going to be run over by it. If you're not, I guess you can just let it go by you, or you can warn people. I tend to position myself so the on-time train doesn't run me over, and I'm not looking the wrong direction. But when you start hearing, you know, it kind of came out with cancel culture. I don't want to get into all that, but that's where it stops making sense there. When things stop making sense, you better take a step back and relook at that. Assess whether or not that's going to be involving you. And if not, maybe you can avoid. If you have an insight, maybe you can tell people. But if you're going to find yourself on the rail tracks with the on-time train bearing down on you and you're facing the wrong direction, you better think quick. And that's what's starting to happen. People are starting to having to respond, and they don't have a capacity to respond. I can hand them an answer, if you will. I can hand them a preservation of record showing the wrongfulness of an employer's potential termination of their livelihood. And they will do the first 3-4 steps wrong and undo everything that was in that document. It is our society. And I don't have an answer for that problem. And yet, no one also comes knocking the door down here at Real Liberty Media to listen in order to be able to do that for themselves. And at some point, I have to just shrug my shoulders, and I really don't know what more to do, but there are people that need it. So I continue to go, and there are some people that will take it up and do start doing things better. And then we hear these anomalous things. I think there was two, and I've now heard two professors speak out on the wrongness of these mandatory injections. And mandatory has to be put in quotes here, although most everybody, the officials will assert that they're mandatory, and most people will agree they're mandatory. And yet, when you go look at the objective basis, the black and white, the law, there's either no authority in the people that are saying they're mandatory, and they'll admit to that if you look carefully, or there hasn't been the jurisdiction established in the parties, the people, the public health officials that would have the authority in order to impose. And that's what I've asked you to focus on, because the local authority is the authority if they can gain jurisdiction. And the way they get jurisdiction is to follow the Communicable Disease Code. And inside there is a lot of answers, because they can't get you into mitigation until they have the jurisdiction through the what? Some of you should have read this and should know. What's the very first thing that has to happen? And what's one of the things I keyed on, part of the Portuguese court said, that clarified that for us, was what? If you read your communicable disease code, what has to happen is there has to be a medical report issued from a medical professional with you in your name, suspected of having a contagion, an infectious agent, that's on a list for communicable disease. And without that, the official can't gain jurisdiction. They're acting completely outside of their authority. They don't have a jurisdiction to have an opinion of what a mitigation measure would be to force these things on you, or to, as I see Montreal in the chat room, the forced consent. You don't have to. They don't have the authority, the jurisdiction. They have to get the jurisdiction to gain the authority to do that. And so, these words are pretty simple to see. They're kind of obtuse in some regard in some people's thinking. But you have to have the power and authority to make the determination. It's like a court. Your jurisdiction is the power to hear and determine the matter. The public health official is the power to find and prevent the communicable disease. They are directed by a health professional to start that. The health professional of which has exclusive jurisdiction over your treatment, which means your issue is with the doctor as well. And even though the public health official may determine something needs to be done to prevent, that may not be applicable to you relative to your private medical needs, which the doctor is better positioned to discuss. And I would say for those of you that find that your doctors are not better positioned to discuss that, you need to go find better doctors. And I'm speaking to that because some of you don't want to fill out, as I've been working on an affidavit for religious conviction for exception to getting the mandated stuff and treatments. It doesn't exist just on the jab. It's all these other things possibly as well. There's quite a few people that want to keep going down the medical exception provision, but you need to have your doctor there. And if the doctor thinks you need the jab, then you're stuck. If the doctor's not aware like they need to be, you're going to be kind of stuck. So you need to go find another doctor. And it seems to me when we went into this COVID nonsense, COVID fraud nonsense, and they went to e-government and e-everything, because that's what the governance, not government, but governance needs. Needs you at a distance from some far-off place to remotely control you and be in control of you, they've allowed for e-medicine. And so we can jump into that and say, okay, I don't need to be in the same town, right? I don't need to go see a doctor anymore in an office. I get to go pick one from across the country. And you're going to have to seek out the doctors that are going to be aware enough to know that there's a broad spectrum of treatment for anyone and their condition, whatever their condition is. But getting back to the religious conviction affidavit, it was deemed to be harsh, and I had to laugh because I don't know what's harsh about defending yourself against tyranny, fraud, and the destruction of your way of life. And I don't know. When you get a people that believe that, then you realize that your supposed representative, that's not a pit bull I'd want for a representative in the law. And yet there they are, professing that they're ethically going to represent you. And you start seeing the anomalies. I've got two professors speaking out about the wrongness of these mandatory injections, and they professors now, academia, lose their job. One was in ethics, and the other is a professor speaking to critical thinking who was a professor in law. And they both have lost their jobs. And so the future, you can see, just look at the deeds that are going on. The future they want, not the professors, but the ones that fired the professors. Though that mindset, the future they want is no critical thinking and no ethics. And the VAERS, as underreported as it is, showing a new world order creating morbidity and mortality of non-critical thinking people devoid of ethics, is what is the future they want. This is the corruption of blood destroying the right to property. Remember, this is what they don't, you're not going to have property and you're going to like it. And I've been talking about this and how it works and how the law, how the Constitution's there to forbid it if you would just step up and make your records. And I offer an affidavit and the first thing people do is all the wrong steps. And so what does that mean? It means a lot of work that is in education, isn't it? We're a society, an ill-prepared society for what I told you was coming down and we would be ill-prepared for. And it was the worst thing that this society that was ill-prepared would have to face. And I see lots of people do whatever they want. They do, of course, you want to do as little as possible. You run away, you kind of hide yourself, you cloister yourself, or you just capitulate. And you don't even provide even a balanced discussion. If you feel you have to, but you don't even say, wait a minute, I understand I need to have this, but then put the question, where was I found to be a risk that you can do this at all? And you get in a dialogue, or maybe a nicer dialogue, maybe not so official or so legalistic as people may think I talk. Or assert. I only do that because that's where you're going to go to get the black and white. How you communicate all that is really up to each one of us, as I keep giving over to that. But it has to be consistent and done correctly. You can't capitulate. When you're challenging someone doesn't have jurisdiction, you don't allow them without giving the condition back, a conditional acceptance, some of you may have heard. You don't, when someone calls you that doesn't have authority and wants to hand you something, you have to conditionally accept the reception and say, as long as you're going to talk about the non-fraudulent exigency, go ahead, send me something. You don't allow them to continue their questions against you. That implies they still have authority to do so, and you've just relinquished that power that you've denied them. And so this is a little, again, like a chess game in a way. It's not my rules. This is how they treat you. This is why we are where we are. And because nobody responds in any more powerful way, those people will, it's an incrementalness that they keep checking whether or not you got the answer. You don't have the answer. They keep moving and moving faster and faster. Now it's almost like they're beyond Operation Warp Speed now, obviously. And they're just grabbing terrain against us as I've never really understood. But it's just a dismay how they can grab as much terrain as they have. And it all ends as soon as people say, wait a minute, you are a criminal without jurisdiction. And here's where you have the burden to produce a non-fraudulent exigency for everything you're claiming that I need to do. I know people appreciate that. Underneath that, even if they did claim and they showed a non-fraudulent exigency, there's still limitations. And if you understand what I say about back, if there's a battlefield and you keep stepping back, if they keep having authority, you keep having authority, you walk them back into a place where they still can't get you. Because there's this supposed balance between your rights and the government's power. And the things I've noticed say, if the government, the officials under color of government, properly done, would given presumed to be done, you go a certain path, your first step was a violation. Your first step was a breach. Your first step was a crime. And that's what the affidavit sets up. That's when I talk about mining and mining laws. I'm setting that up. Their first action was a breach. In other words, I can't prove it absolutely, but we still haven't yet gotten the first letter to us from the Forest Service. It's a little bit of an aside because I treat these all the same way. They're all pretty clear what's going on how they defeat people, and I neutralize all that. They contacted a different property owner and blamed them for what we do on our mining claim, our entry. First, that was their first mistake. And I think they're doing that because that's another tactic. They did this to a miner in California who I helped to get his stuff back when they did the very same thing. They blamed the adjacent miner for doing wrong. And when the adjacent miner said, but that's not my stuff, they used that as a consent. The federal agency uses that as a consent to go steal the target miner's machinery. Is the technique they used on us. And yet we haven't received our letter. And we haven't received a subsequent letter when they were told it was the wrong property. And I think they're doing that because I've already established when they send us a letter and they don't have jurisdiction, it's mail fraud. Now, I don't know how much longer who's going to recognize that. It's been over 12 years since I established that one, but they're not sending the letter yet. Is another technique you throw in, you fold in and fold on to this. And what we are required now to do, because we're looking, it's really a rogue environment relative to law of the land and free, and all these agencies are supposed to be limited. That's not my observation. You're seeing it happen in spades about this Coby fraud. And there's a way to address it, and we all need to address it that way. Even those of us that have to compromise, even so, and have to maybe wear a mask for the time being. But you also then to have to say, write a letter. Say, I need to find out what your... You make the complaint that it's bothering you. You give yourself the in by saying it's a problem. If you have nothing more, and you say, but I have a problem, I have a question. Where did you find me a risk to require this of me? And so I don't know how anybody would be able to do get into the discussion to try and be an example that this is not really proper. And you walk through, slowly back through that way, as long as you're not threatened, like they are with mandatory injections, you have a little bit more time, although that's slowly coming down. So this VARS underreporting is telling you there's lots and lots and lots of people creating morbidity, mortality. They want non-thinking people in the future who are underneath it, who have their blood corrupted so that they don't have property and they'll like it. They won't even know different. It's going to be the sounds like the world of the clueless crickets to me. How about you? Just like I've been saying. And remember here, if we move forward, you got to kind of keep track of the shifting goalposts. That new definition for vaccine does not prevent disease, but poisons an immune system into response. It's called stimulation. Yeah? And they made that little adjustment so that they try to get away from the promotion that is required of it to do prevention. And that's where I think the hitch in that giddy up in that matrix is that you can jump in on. Because if you go to your state law where your communicable disease code is, the jabs can't even be suggested as a mitigation measure once the report's done the assessment and it's you that's the infectious principal. They can't even offer the jab as a preventative measure. Because their duty is to prevent disease, not stimulate the immune system causing the disease. Boosting disease is not producing protection, nor causing prevention or creating immunity. If you look very careful, they can't get where they say they're going. And they can't get there where they say they're going relative to the duty and obligation of your local state authority to be able to do so. You aren't seeing any immunity when you look at the definitions, just endless stimulation. What stimulation? This is the big interesting twist, as you heard the IMF chief speak. This wasn't about health. It's not about medical care. This is the stimulation. It's the economy, remember? More important. More important than the monetary or fiscal policy. IMF chief told us that this vaccine policy is more important. Remember, we were told, it's the economy, stupid. Look at the United States, how it was formed. Look at the peace treaty that formed it and the license it was... the undertaking it took for commerce and the commerce amongst the states provision, which necessarily isn't bad because at the regulation side, making things regular, but it became a power. It became more not making things regular amongst the states, but actually control and controlling. And everything that's deemed to be in commerce is underneath the federal authority. And so it's the economy, the boosting, they're boosting to protect. The only thing they're protecting is their pocketbook. The commerce of the nation, which is also tied to national security, which is also how I can get to Title 50 pretty quick. And if you threaten that, you're a terrorist. You're hearing that coming out. I don't know what else more I can say. The news is explaining what I've been telling you is happening. That's how they're doing it. What the DHS just came out. You talk against these mandatory vaccines, we're going to deem you to be a terrorist. But look very carefully before you go off the deep end on that. I think I see people doing it all the time. About this. They'll look very, 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 very careful. You always see the nexus to the power Mostly it's in commerce, but this one is violence. It's not just that if you, like, they could deem, I mean, the rogue government can do and say anything. It doesn't mean anything. Look what they're doing with COVID fraud. I mean, look what this thing they're doing. Complete fraud. They can say anything. But where you're looking is where it really is going to attach to you. And as long as we're talking in, neutral, where we not advocate violence, that is the connection. They can attach the domestic terrorism when you're advocating violence through your positions. And this is where, and if I ever get to the tabs here, and I always, boy, this is getting so much. I got so many tabs that you'll see how there's someone in the news, hit the news, went viral. He's talking about there's going to be hell to pay. And I looked at that and said, well, you could say that, but what you needed to do first, not just say there's going to be hell to pay. You should have set up the fraud. You should have explained to the commissioners you're talking to that they did not comport with the communicable disease laws. They didn't force a public health official to comport with the communicable disease laws, and they failed to do these few things, 5, 7, whatever they are. And once you say that, then you turn around and you say, and when, as people are finding this out and it's fraud and you're not upholding the law, there's going to be hell to pay. Would be a much better way to approach this than to just come out and say, I'm a veteran, the veterans are out there, and we're done. That is what brings up the DHS interpretation of violence relative to your resistance, your denial. And I've said, don't go down that path. Develop your foundation first. And I don't see people doing that. And I don't know why that's not natural to us. The more I see this, I'm not really been asking anything outlandish. It isn't because you look at the law and all of a sudden you see now we learned something. No, if you look and you're, even as I was explaining how to use the affidavit to my colleague who is trying to show people, he's the one that's teaching them what it means and how to use it. And there's dozens and dozens and dozens, I understand, of people that are now listening on that end. It may be harsh. It may be deemed by a bar S member harsh, but it is always creating the position they can stop the problem. It's their burden. They can just come clean and it's done. And so you always leave open the option that can, you don't pin them into a corner and there's no need to. You just give the option for them to do the right thing. And once they haven't done it quite a few times in a different avenues, you've established the things under law you need to if you're going to go do something legal, like go to an equity relief. You've established their knowing, their malice, their wantonness, whatever it is you're after that you need to be after. You've established it, and all these times you gave them opportunity to stop being a criminal. But by the time it gets to the third letter or so, you've identified it's nothing but criminality. So this isn't like, oh, we got a drop-dead silver bullet thing. This is a process. This is a record-making process to do what everybody thinks they can do when they have an opinion. Oh, that guy's a crook. That official's a crook. I'm explaining how you develop the fact of that. And then you don't have to say it. And so the system is boosting. Their boosting is not your health. They're boosting their pocketbook, clearly. Vaccine policy is a larger thing. It's a global thing, larger and more important right now than monetary or fiscal policy. I didn't say that. I told you it was coming. I told you the systems would be focused on that. I told you about Agenda 2030, and then the IMF chief says it brings it out. This last few months ago. Exactly what they've been telling us they're coming in on and what it's about. They are talking about your immunity in all these, and you see them adjust the goalposts that can kind of cover this thing up. They're talking about their immunity in stimulating you. You got it? Stimulating you. They're stimulating their condition of control because the system is not operating in law. By definition, these mRNA vaccines can't lawfully be public health officials' toolbox. They can't be in there. Nor are they available to the medical professionals' pharmacy because they don't actually cause an immunity. Go look very carefully. And since you look back and you go back to your doctor and you say, well, that's the exclusive authority for treatment, and you find the proper doctor, even if it's an e-doctor, and they're out there now, And they realize that these jabs are not within their pharmacy, their tools to help and treat. You start to realize it's not in the public official to determine, but it's in the doctor. And if you have the right doctor, they're not going to have that available to them to treat you. You're going to have to look for something else, whether that's whatever. Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, some other things, whatever. Maybe just putting vitamin D and zinc, get your body resistant, get your health up like it should be, get some sunshine. So we have lots of alternatives. The problem is that it's facing off against officials or people who think they're official. I've actually seen documents now where, and this is a critical thing to start to notice, being, if I could say, privy to documents that I'm not supposed to see, if you will, because it's between employers and employees. But because of this affidavit, I would send it so I can understand what I'm the terrain I'm dealing in. The companies are claiming state power, folks. They're literally claiming that they have the power of the state. And I looked at that and said, great, there's no way for them to actually justify that. That's another fraud. Let's throw that as a clause. It's just a 5-6 words. I just throw it on there. I throw the burden on them to show how they can actually wield the power of the state. How did you assume the power of the state to be able to consider these things upon them? And like I said, you start identifying the anomalies, that's just another, well, I consider, log on the pyre you're going to destroy them with. And you're going to destroy them with them. They actually put the log on their own, the fire. They find themselves on the pyre they've actually stepped on. Because nobody in their right mind would be a company that would claim state power. And that means that these people are insane. Now you've got a different complexion of the problem. Then you can't call them insane. They'll go insane on you. So no. On top of all that, you know, people rationalize this. It's not, I don't think this is original thought. People know this, and you say it, but you don't really learn how to enforce it for yourself. Even if all of this stuff, they show jurisdiction, they show that jab was possible. I don't know of any official having any authority to order any treatment with which death is a side effect. Again, if I'm wrong, correct me, because I need to be straightened out here. I mean, if they did, and this is the thing that's been always struck me, the image of this has been in my mind for a long time. It's always been there when I saw it, how brutal. It was an iconic image. And I almost don't even want to call it to your attention because it's that brutal in the world. People are brutal to each other. But what came to my mind on that is if they can go ahead and order something, a treatment, so called, that includes a side effect of death, it's, to my mind, it's, they'd be able to do the murder that you saw, that iconic picture of the Viet Cong being murdered at the hands of the national police. Because that would be much more efficient measure, wouldn't it, to prevent? If prevention was the local official's duty and absolute right and power, without due process, the prevention would be like what Kim Jong-un has been said to have done to some people who were just out walking about when they'd start locking down their country. Just shot them. But you know, it really doesn't. It doesn't work like that. Yes. And that's what I want you to be able to empower yourself with. They haven't gone there yet. I think they can get themselves there. They have to get the population to agree. You're watching about 50% of the population actually agree to that already. And yet we have these other examples out there that are helping to mitigate this, buying you more time. Every one of you, eventually, they're going to be causing you to do things that are not even meant for you, and you can tell right away, just go to your communicable disease law, and you'll realize there was no medical report on you, you'll realize they have no jurisdiction. And therefore, without the power to receive without the power after reception of the medical report, they are provided, without that medical report, no authority to make any decisions on what mitigation measure they can assess against anybody. And so these little bitty glimpses of the alternative are in the world, and that's where I want to start today. Get it finally onto the tabs. Denmark abolishes all corona measures. The Danish parliament recently decided in Copenhagen, that all corona measures should be ended October 1st. There will be, therefore, no longer be mask requirements, and the test regime will be abolished. The Danes will then no longer have to provide evidence and whether they are vaccinated, unvaccinated, or whether they have tested positive or negative. And this is the answer I told you that the probably the pinnacle of the resistance in the United States of the governors would be, I think it's the South Dakota governor, Governor Noem, should have done. I told you that's what her whole point would have been to say, we have no infectious agent, we have not found one, and therefore we have no power to wield. Would have allowed her to say that there was nothing needed here is explained right here in this first paragraph, and I'll let you read the rest if you want to see. There's a country that says, well, that we're going to, this is all nuts, we're not doing any of this. And therefore, the limits are off. But no, the United States didn't do that, and this is where I fault even that pinnacle of resistance in the United States, because this happens to be and continuing to be what? An economic thing, right? It's the bribe. She will not relinquish that power by saying what I'm saying because it means no federal money coming in, the bribe money coming in to enforce it. And as long as she can maintain even a small semblance that there's a need, like they did in Tennessee, oh, we're going to reduce some of these mitigation members, but we're still monitoring the COVID-19. We're still going to hold we're going to grab that brass ring of monetary control, because otherwise we're not going to get your money. And I suppose that's one of the aspects of it's a private reason why they do it, because it makes them politically look good. Which, again, all this has got to be politics. Climate change is politics. COVID-19 is politics. There's nothing that doesn't get done that's not politics, it seems. It's certainly not the law. I guess that's the other side of this. So it's not politics. It has to be politics, because it's not the law. And so people are getting benefit, even the ones that are in the United States anyway. Obviously, and this was obvious to me way back in March of 2020. Remember, before this thing got going, I said there was no test. There could be no emergency a week. I think it was a week before they declared the test. They declared the emergencies. I declared there was no thing to be substantiated. And within the next week, I found out there was big federal dollars moving around, whether or not a county anywhere ever got it, because it all went to the state governors first to disseminate. I said, this is a bribe. And I'm not going to be, as I told my colleague, I'm not going to be a party to the bribe. I will not offer any information on what this needs to be, if that information is going to be turned into continuing the problem. If nobody's going to step up and say what the problem is, and no one's going to determine for them and their county whether or not they have an infectious, the outbreak, by identifying the infectious agent, then they're in on the bribe. I don't care who they are. And so far, that's held. And that point is still relevant, that it's about the economy, stupid. How long ago were we told that? Was it Cargill or Carvel or some guy in the media? Clinton or something? Vague vapors of memory here. I don't really get too close into tight on that. But there it was. We were told. We were prepared for that. That's where it's always been going, is so-called money. Now, I say that, and every time I say it, you find alternatives, folks. I don't know how we're going to do it, but find the alternatives. And so Denmark blows this whole thing up as far as an example. We now see how. I would add the point of, okay, there's a whole country that did it. They go in and find out that there's no isolate. This is all nonsense. And so they're moving forward. Maybe you can, too, locally. I don't know how each one of you would communicate, if you do at all, with people, and I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying that I've been very successful with the people that we had lined up, because they just don't feel that they have a say, and they don't, nobody, it seems, wants to just use the black and white to support themselves. And I'm offering, when I bring something forward, it's supported by the black and white. For the religious conviction affidavit, I do the copy and paste of the code where the legislature is explaining the what it takes to do that. And I put that right in the document. So even including that black and white, that's a big paragraph, including that, it's still one page. But inside there, if you read it clearly on one page as an affidavit, that means it's testimony. It means it's evidence, and it has to be rebutted by another affidavit with someone's signature on it that's going to come under penalty of perjury to counter it, which they can't do. Well, they can do the affidavit, but it's not going to be truth if they try to counter it because there's nothing there for them. The legislature hasn't put all these conditions that the agencies have allowed themselves to continue to question you on your faith. In other words, your faith, there's no, the legislature provided no authority for, once you told the government that you had a religious conviction, that you had to profess your faith. And yet that's what the certification that the state does, which is an improper form if you look at it, it doesn't meet the code. It requires that you have a reason. That's just professing your faith. That's a religious test. Well, that's in some constitutions, at least the one that's in that state. In Oregon, jurors and witnesses are not supposed to be put under a religious test. Well, what do you think your testimony is on that affidavit but being a witness, first-hand witness of the crime against you? And so that's been thrown in on that affidavit. And that's why the legislature didn't make these allowances to the agency to execute wrongfully that way. Anyway, when you understand what you're doing and you want to think about, you think you know the law, then you start looking the way with my eyes and how I perceive it. You start to see that it's like you talk about living constitution, living protections. They're in there. You just can't let people who have looked at those words like attorneys a lot and watered them down. You have to press hard to the point that as soon as you do, you're looked harsh by those people. Like, I guess playing smash mouth and then getting smashed in the mouth, it's kind of harsh, I suppose. You didn't expect it. And all you're doing is saying, you went too far, fast. You went way too far, way too fast. In fact, you went so far, so fast, so wrongfully, you violated me already that I even have to send this to you. Why do I say that? Because when you go to communicable disease laws, they're kind of not going to talk. They're not supposed to talk to you. The communicable disease law would say the public health official probably approached you, probably through your doctor, to say, hey, this guy's, gal's really got something infectious. We need to get them out of society right now and isolate them or do a treatment or something. That's how that was supposed to work. The employer would have never seen this. Unless the employer saw it in the beginning, like they saw the signs or something. But that's still not their authority. That's just their witnesses saying, you need to go see a doctor. And so when they discombobulated this whole thing, tore it all up, the hierarchy of how it's supposed to happen, it offers them the ability to violate you. And if you're not more knowledgeable about that, you can be easily, Vince, duped. Duped easily. Even though it's just easily, isn't it? So here we go. Why might Denmark be able to do all this? Let's go right through some of the tabs, I hope, here. Comparing SARS-CoV-2 natural immunity to vaccine-induced immunity, reinfections versus breakthrough infections, and they're finding, again, your natural immunity is better. And so if I was looking at a doctor, not to go through too deep on this, the doctor who knows about this would say, well, you're not really susceptible. You're not really a condition. Well, I really don't see anything here that's a contagion. We haven't isolated SARS-CoV-2. It might be some underlying comorbidity. And besides, that's not going to kill you. Your natural immune system, once interacting with this thing, whatever it is, will be stronger than, and will not break out. See, the breakouts are your body's response to a pop poison to stimulate your immune system to respond artificially. The natural one, it provides more robust, immunity then. See how that works? You are getting immunity if you can survive the first attack. And what they'll claim is, well, we're trying to mitigate that. Well, but most of us, there's what? Is it even 2%? Is it 1.5% of the population that's responding to this particular, even if we can say this particularly to SARS-CoV-2, which again is a fraud. I don't even, like I said, part of these things, if you mentioned SARS-CoV-2, as I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, can't even talk about COVID-19. That's a fraud. You can't even give in to it. It's a fraud. Because underneath that fraud is it has a cause, and it's SARS-CoV-2. And that's not a natural cause. That is a chemical weapon. At any rate, so I get kind of short on that part of it. However, for discussion purposes, we can see our natural immune system by this tab. If you need more help, you want to bring it to your doctor. Go to a doctor that's good. Likely a good doctor right now won't need to be convinced. But I don't know. There's lots of things going on about keeping people locked into so-called professionals. And so you may have to have a little bit more to show maybe that a professional you're supposed to be before is not necessarily so talented in what you're supposed to be doing. And we get into the ethics part of this. Maybe that has to come into the point. That gets you more back into the agency type stuff. But anyway, for this point, we see that our natural immune system is better when it interacts naturally with whatever's out there. Rolling Stone's ivermectin hit piece debunked after hospital says no overdoses from medicine. So media, and we see I don't know why people, when we see that any of these media companies are providing lies or setting up and promoting the fraud, the outcry of shutting them down and removing all energy from them should be more than palpable. It should be action. Whether or not anybody here listens to me is on, subscribes to Rolling Stone. They came out to try and dismiss, to denounce ivermectin, making a false story that people were being poisoned over, I think it was, Oklahoma? Yeah, when an Oklahoma doctor told the media horror stories about hospitals jammed with patients and self-medicated themselves with ivermectin right into the emergency room, it was a hit. Well, it was a lie. And so that's been found out. Media is willing to denounce things. The point is, it's really not up to anybody in the media. They should be out of this anyway. Why? Because the doctors are, on the point of treatment, are the exclusive agent, I guess I can say. Why? Because the Portuguese court informed us that's exactly how this works, and you can see it when you see their communicable disease laws. These reports come from a health professional, typically the doctor, reporting that you have the symptoms and other signals that you likely might or suspect you are suspected of having an infectious and communicable disease on the list. That's where this thing starts. And so everybody who's talking about whether ivermectin's good or bad has no place to say. They have no jurisdiction and authority to talk about this stuff. So anybody who does, my senses are for me, is that anybody who's talking about it this way is part of the fraud. They're part of aiding and abetting the fraud. And they can't just be dismissed. You can dismiss them by not, for Rolling Stones, who cares? But this is affecting people around you. That's our interaction amongst ourselves is going to be hampered a lot. And we're going to have to figure out ways how to deal with that. And sometimes you will and sometimes you won't. The most important problem for people that I'm getting here in the last few weeks here is people losing their job. It's not just an interaction with people. People are going to lose their livelihood over this. And so my view, part of that is likely you're going to lose your job anyway. You better make a better record. Don't shoot yourself in the foot when you do that. Otherwise, your record termination record doesn't look good, does it? Anyway, so that's up to people to consider. Well, we go on now, and when the thing that they want to now impose, maybe what Denmark wanted to get away from, I don't know. Don't talk to the people in Denmark. But here we have when they impose these things. Over 200 vaccinated end up in Kanukistan's provinces emergency rooms with heart problems. And so I'm wondering where the doctors were on this. Where was the doctor-patient relationship which oversaw whether or not these treatments would cause these heart problems that they knew were coming on, even if you give them a little bit of credit. But these mRNA vaccines are causing problems, as reported here, 200 vaccinated end up in Kanukistanian province, it's like in Toronto here, I think the area is, in emergency rooms with heart problems. Maybe Denmark saw the light, and this is the reason why they didn't want it. They gave up. They just gave it up. They said, we're done with the entirety of the thing, and now we don't have to deal with it at all. You will go to your doctor, and the doctor will look at you without all this noise and without the the pall of the title of COVID and really look at your symptoms and really treat what's going on at best that that doctor knows. Maybe Denmark read this thing. A new Israeli study finds fully vaccinated people are at the greater risk of hospitalization and 13 times more likely to catch COVID-19 than those who have recovered and have natural immunity. Again, your natural immunity is best. Get your health going up. They find out 13 times more likely to catch COVID-19. I think that's actually short. You're going to shed the variant, the D variant, aren't you? We've already known that. And at least if we looked at the Massachusetts story, at least 85% of you getting it are going to shed this variant out there for the plasma protein to be infecting us, those of us that are asymptomatic, and everybody else, actually. But the new Israeli study finds fully vaccinated people are a greater risk of hospitalization. What's that speaking to? These vaccinations are causing the very problem they're complaining, the overwhelmed hospitals. What's more, I don't have the link to it, but what's more important in this country, boy, did I just faux pas again, in this occupied territory, is that this occupied state has the highest vaccination rates and has the highest problems. And I told you to keep focused on this because this was like this is the example state as we move into the Israeli Zionistas' control of what's going on. It doesn't seem like it, but if you look at where their fingers are in all their technology, with technocrats, they're the premium technocrats and the suppliers of all that technology, and the example of how you're going to go do it. That you're finding out that when they imply the future we want, it goes south fast. It's artificial. So notwithstanding that we see 13 times, it's actually greater because this is the occupied territory that is also the worst responding to these measures. And that's up to you to consider, I suppose. If there's a consideration, my thought is just avoid it and do your best to do that. And some of you can without much fanfare. Some are not going to be able to do so without doing some official recording, making of a record because of these things. The story was coming on before it happened. White House signals new COVID measures coming for people who are unvaccinated. So notwithstanding all the harm coming through the vaccinated, they're after the unvaccinated, as we've been talking, the asymptomatic so-called. The unvaccinated, those that don't believe that they should get it, and those that have a thought that maybe it's not good for them. Ahead of President Joe Biden's announcement Thursday about COVID measures, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, remember the P's are silent here, right? P-S-A-K-I, Psaki, said that there may be in Pharma, right, in pharmaceuticals. Psaki said that there may be some new measures that will be imposed on unvaccinated people. There are six steps the president's announcing that there will be new components. Some of that are be related to actual testing, some will be related to mandates, and some will be related to how we should ensure kids will be protected in schools. Well, let's go back to what the vaccine is and definition. It doesn't protect anybody. It actually gives you the disease. That's not immunity. And so this whole statement coming on eventually comes to Joe Biden actually threatening 100 million people get the shot or starve as they roll this thing out. And I've got two links, and you kind of need to read them because, like I said, some of these stories have part of the story and part of them don't. And I think the second link is where you get the shot or starve. These titles, my thoughts go like 1,000 places of authority, looking for their authority real fast to just... so that I can qualify that they have no jurisdiction. But pretty quickly, it's right there in the black and white. He doesn't have the jurisdiction to say this. And yet he's going to say it. There's going to be a lot of people going to be harmed for it. They're threatening and declared war, it says. Joe Biden just declared war on 100 million Americans. Well, I told you they declared war on you, what, yesterday, 20 years ago. You enemy combatant. So the whole population has been declared war on, but this article wants to show you only 100 million Americans have been threatened to have their livelihoods cut off. And that's an important word. That's in law, that word livelihood, not in legal. And I'm not going to make the too much distinction. You just keep focused on the fact that when you refer to your job, it's a livelihood. It's a fundamental right to make a livelihood. And they may be able to fire you at will, but they can't fire you for a fraudulent reason, nor can they do it with the assumption of illicit power or a power they could never get, like what companies are saying they have states' power. Talk about a public-private partnership. Well, that's not much different than the Bar Association, isn't it, being an agency of the state, is it? See, so this is not even new. And that, and I know one state because I did the research and I did the filing, I did a paperwork, a paper to describe it. That was done in Oregon, the same Oregon, the same state over here that we're talking about that I'm working to help some people with their religious conviction affidavit. That was public-private partnership was acknowledged in 1953, as it was publicly, openly in 26 states of the nation. So this is not unfamiliar territory for these foreigners either. So 100 million Americans are threatened with their livelihoods and starve out their families if they don't submit to medical treatment that they believe is bad for them. Well, it's not even that, folks. See, if you focus the wrong thing, that the government doesn't have the power to insist upon is really what that is. How do I prove that? Because Joe Biden has no power. He's just the president. Oh, well, he's the president. He can tell anybody. He's got the power. Yeah, he's got the military behind him. Well, maybe. But does he have actual power underneath the Republican form representative government? Well, no, because we already acknowledge, the United States already acknowledged the power for health issues is sitting in the state. Kind of like your wildlife. The state has the authority for determining harvesting wildlife within the border. It's exclusive to the state. Same thing with your treating you like an animal through your veterinary services and your public health laws. Using military veterinaries in order to make the policy. Fascinating. People don't pull this stuff together, but there it is. I'll go back into it. Joe Biden threatens everybody. Well, if you look in this story, they actually admit, I think it's this one. If not the other one, you'll find it. You read it. They actually don't have the authority they claim. And so that's a key. You got to take that, highlight that, and realize the federal has no authority. The president has zero authority on this to order the mandate. They're looking at how to influence people. This is all about influence, buy-in. They also use, and I think it's the second story, they said they're going to use the military. He's scapegoating unvaccinated people as a reason for the pandemic. It's just right out of the playbook of Nazi Germany. It's illegal in our system to engage the military to make this coercive mass vaccination program happen. Is it illegal in our system, folks? Go look very carefully. Remember the exactions of every kind. Remember Title 50. They can do lots of stuff if they can write the exception and then, in particular, ride along the need of national security. I hope you pull all this stuff together on how they're plausibly bringing their authority through, why this guy, the president, I don't care who he is, I don't care what he comes from, whatever. He has no authority. He's still yakking. And no one's shutting that down. No one's saying, well, you don't have that authority. Now, well, if you look carefully, they're also doing it to whom? Those that are taking federal funds, particularly Medicare, the health facilities, Medicare, Medi-Cal, whatever all those are. The federal funds connection leash is what they're doing. In other words, it's the same type of bribe, but in a reverse order. If you receive federal funds, you're going to have to mandate these things. That's still not true, but that's what they're going to say. See, these companies could be protected by employees of offering the right answer. Once they identify critically in the record that there's no power of state authority, that there's no compliance with the local health authority, then the employer can say the same things. Oh, you're right. This would be the honest answer. Oh, you're right. You aren't a risk. Oh, and the rest of our employees are not risks either. Thank you very much. And, oh, wait a minute. Now you're putting in positions on us that the local health authority can't even find. How are we supposed to do mitigation measures for something that doesn't exist here? We think we're being extorted and coerced through fraud at the federal level. how fast this is an answer to me, in my mind anyway. Maybe I'm certainly not maybe wired the same, but there it is. How fast this would be done for with honest people and honestly doing their jobs everywhere, locally. These relying on the black and white that provides the protection of due process. That in this country, yet, well, maybe we're done, I don't know. When you invoke police power, the police power prerogative, you have to maintain and demonstrate a non-fraudulent exigency for what you're going to do. And no jurisdiction in the United States or across the world has been forced to show that or had anybody make it a real issue where that wasn't able to be a can being kicked down the road. See, for employment, as I told you, the war is for every man and woman for themselves in their job or whatever is local. They can't kick that can down without violating you immediately. And if you write the affidavit by presenting that they have not shown the non-fraudulent exigency, they haven't demonstrated that, they're already sitting and causing irreparable harm without authority, let alone jurisdiction. I mean, they can't ever get that. And so these mandated things that they're saying the federal government wants to mandate, they're so safe and effective. A story came through, and I'm going to refer to someone because they had a more complete story that I don't normally refer to. In fact, I think these people that they have millions of people listen to, they make, I understand, millions of dollars also, like on YouTube. I just don't even know what to think about them. They're sending people just talk. People want to listen to talk entertainment. They really don't have a real insight. And yet they're millionaires on this. But I'm going to refer to a guy's website anyway because they had the most complete story. And it's probably the only story, I think, that was out there that was, I can find, mostly consistent with the independent news, which I'll start with. These injections are so safe that when there was an accident of a truck carrying Moderna vaccine, the sheriff's department in Mon County closed I-79 to clean it up. What was interesting in the additional story, that some of the backstory was picked up, title here, Emergency Responses, Department of Defense has taken over the vaccine shipment crash that also shuttered airspace over this. These vaccines are so safe, it required the military to come in, folks, and shut down the airspace. What's interesting is this ship was headed out of town. It was going to another country to go poison those people. Thank goodness in one regard, but what a shame on us for those harming those people. HHS says all 1.2 million Moderna vaccines from the West Virginia truck crash are accounted for. So they were able to go in on a truck crash, find all the vials, apparently account for them. And they're going to head out to that country, but they closed the highway overnight, folks. And then lots of people were commenting that live there, that watched accidents happen all the time on the highway as part of the story. But they talked about the only thing they were worried about was oil and some antifreeze. You know, they don't take hazmat out to go clean that up, and they usually do it within a couple hours. They close that highway overnight, apparently. Then they close the airspace over it. These vaccines are so safe. They had to keep a complete isolation on them. The military was immediately called in. What have I been saying about the integration of the military? And these things are military weapons. There's really more to this story. I just want to touch it. I don't have the time. There's so much to really cover on all this, but really, we can confirm, I guess, through this. Who's involved? The Department of Defense is absolutely immediately in on spills, if you will, on a safe product. So we also have lots of other things that are military connected. We know the internet was actually started. Was it ARPA started the internet for what? To keep the communications spread out all over the place. Multiple pathways can be generated would be the heart. They figured is the hardest way to shut it down militarily. And so we would expect that it's a weapon, a tool for the military. And we now are getting, we're talking to you about the Internet of Things. I've been talking about the technology they have is about surveillance on you and how to move forward every attack or domination that the government wants across the globe. And it, I ran across here weeks and weeks and weeks ago this information I'm bringing up now, that the military is involved, and the military is involved in these mandatory injections that the federal government has no power actually to mandate. It's kind of like I said, it's the, you are mandatory evacuation. You have to, you are required, you're mandatorily required to evacuate unless you don't. And the epitome, the highest story in my mind comes to the guy over there that decided he was not going to leave Spirit Lake. And he was not going to mandatory evacuate. They couldn't do anything actually to move him out. And he paid the price for his decision, Harry Truman. When Mount St. Helens blew up and took him out, was his decision under a mandatory evacuation order. So there's really ultimately not really any mandatory anything. Well, unless you're the cause. You can be taken out for that, but you're not the cause. Mandatory is an interesting word. It's kind of like must. Must is not shall. Must is, if you have an answer collateral to the must, or an agency may find some other avenue they may not have to, that's what a must is. Must is only if it's required. And when I turn immediately, look for the conditions. So moving into what is the arteries of the highway are military. 1956, discussion in Eisenhower relative to the highway laws. We'll tell you all about what the highways are about. You just happen to use a military artery. You think you have freedom of travel. Amazing. And we find out now this Internet of Stuff, the highway you see on the road is the highway we see the Internet, the highway of the Internet is actually now we have, I've got tabs. The military or battlefield Internet of Things is what it actually is, will network sensors, wearables, weapons, munitions, platforms for information dominance. The Internet of Things is an emerging revolution in the ICT sector under which there is a shift from the Internet used for interconnecting end-user devices to the Internet used to interconnecting physical objects that communicate with each other and or with humans in order to offer a given service. The Internet of Things, IoT, is a system of interrelated computing devices, mechanical and digital machines, objects, animals, or people that are provided with unique identifiers, UIDs, and the ability to transfer data over a network without requiring human-to-human or human-to-computer interactions. This is under the heading of the Internet, the battlefield of Internet Things. This is now focusing us on what the use of the utility of this Internet is really about. And now we're also finding they're going into privatized mesh networks within all these IoT things that actually communicate with themselves in a parallel pathway through private enterprise. All right, so just start putting this together on how integrated this prison really has been and is, and that this Internet that I've been telling you, all these Internet of Things is military. It's for the benefit of a military perception. Another report here, blockchain-empowered, secure Internet of Battle Things architecture. Okay? It's all kind of right here about your IoT was always military. And this has been known. There's lots of discussion on it. And I guess I can just read more things, but it starts to explain in more totality how comprehensive, what they say, this information from the battlefield to enable real-time decision-making on military operations and enhance autonomy in the battlefield. Not your autonomy, their autonomy. And so there was a lot more to say on all this. There's a lot more to expose. I guess the point I want to offer is some links that show you that I've been explaining how the military has been involved, why they're involved, the Title 50, the exceptions to all these bioweapons and chemical weapons, where they can show a dual use, by definition, like for me, that word dual use was called up Title 50 just like the word novel calls up patent to me. And I hope it starts to do that for you, and you'll be able to quickly get to the points of things, at least get past the cover, the screen, the false front, the spaghetti western false front they put up. But all this is really military stuff. It's all in there to control us. I don't know of anybody that's got any kind of awareness that can deny these are what's being used, it's used for. And why though I'm not doing such a great job at it, I'm always looking for things that will make us the ghost in the machine, make us one more step removed from quick surveillance, quick uptake, which irritates me about my email, because there's just no way I can get people to do what they need to do. And I can't say I'm vulnerable, but I'm a bit vulnerable as to what I do, even though this broadcast is a bit vulnerable. Although I have myself situated that, at least yet, I'm no, in a way, maybe not a threat. And maybe that's because there's not many listeners, even though there should be. That I keep positioning myself in certain ways to limit the exposure. I keep talking to a few people. I said, I won't use certain things because I won't agree to that service that is an implied consent to their third-party interference or interaction with what I do. And if it ever comes as a question, my lack of integration is going to be my implied statement of non-consent. And so it's just a matter of will that matter in a no-law state where they just put a gun to your head and shoot you in the street? No, it won't. So I'm working hard to try to avoid that, and maybe one day that becomes the problem for all of us. Once they go to the point when they can do that, because the best prevention cure for a communicable disease is to get rid of everybody that they suspect has something to communicate. Remember, as I've defined as a report, I can't remember the title of it, or the wayfarer. I can't remember the author of it. The disease, you're the wayfarer of information, new information to people, is a disease to these people. You're a microbe. And so the Internet of Battlefield of Things, I told you that you just watch how they integrate all these things, all these supposed attacks. They're supposed to be, the military was supposed to be on the front end of protection, protecting the country and all this. That's national security stuff. And then we hear from Malware Bytes, FBI warns of ransomware threat to food and agriculture. As I said, that they will be attacking all the things that they modernized. All the things the FBI is supposed to stop or be there protected, so the military is supposed to have total dominance. When they aren't, you know they are the actors behind it, even if it's an illusion. They are the ones actually allowing this, and I suggested to you prior that they would be attacking your food systems, or they would make it look like they're attacking the food systems, and here it is. Malware Bytes is saying they're going after your food. They're going after agriculture. They're going, apparently, in the picture I saw, they're going after interacting with the machinery that's tied into the cloud. Apparently right below where God sits. One of the most critical supplies in this is the sites of cyber criminals. The FBI has issued a private industry notification, a PIN, about cyber criminal actors targeting the food and agricultural sector with ransomware attacks. This is, in a way, not new news. It's just a different sector, isn't it? I told you it looked like they were doing those events on attacking the pipeline, Colonial, and then the Heritage Food before, right? So the suppliers, the manufacturers. I told you this was coming. I told you this was all the target of the modernization stuff. It wasn't going to be done like they said. It wasn't going to secure anything. It was made for insecurity. When they talk about food insecurity, they're talking about this stuff. They're talking about doing this. You just look at it in a way, it's maybe too trite to say so, maybe too limited to say so, but just think about when they tell you something, it's going to go, they're utilizing this infrastructure, this potential, 180 degrees opposite. Modernization is really bringing you back into the current Middle Ages. It's not bringing, as we would think, street language, making things more advanced, more modern. And like progression, it's not progressive like we think advantage. It's actually progressing in an incremental way in the future they want. And so Anyway, so we have an attack on our food system. If the monetary thing, all the things I've talked about were going to be affected, they're now giving us warning. I guess to me, it's, listen, here it comes. If they're telling us that it's real, start to do what you can. Like I said, make alternatives, start storing stuff up. Maybe this is the time. I saw a little thing, I think, I don't know if it was in Mines. Mines is not even responding. It's like no one really wants to respond. No, not many want to be anything in resistance at all. Party anybody doing, but on that I saw it, somebody said, people are soon to find out why grandma washed her aluminum foil and reused her pork fat. And I have to say, well, I can't predict that, but it sure looks like it's going there, and we may see that day. Although last night, it's interesting, I was sleeping, and my thought was, but you know, when I was a little kid, grandma's aluminum foil was so much more thick that she could do that. And I realized how much they've been sucking the capacity out of what we do. The obsolescence of products is such that you only can use it once, if that. How many plastic bags, we can't get those now, but how many plastic bags have you used that didn't even last long enough to get your stuff home? But at any rate. So, FBI's warning, your food is under attack by so-called cyber criminals, and my thought is, well, that's the military. They're targeting us. And I don't know where that came from, how that is, how it stands, how it keeps going, but it is the theme that keeps going on. And if that wasn't enough, an interesting link came to me, which invoked another thing that happened to me earlier in spring, which I hadn't really thought about. Fed-up farmers can finally kill black vultures preying on their cattle. And apparently it's not just cattle. This is an interesting story. Black vultures attacked on... Well, see, these black vultures are protected under federal law, is the point. And what's interesting is, if I can interject the NEPA, that there's a provision in the law, federal law, that they can't interfere with the mankind's needs over the nature. The Fish and Wildlife, Federal Fish and Wildlife, is giving accelerated access now to get cull permits for these vultures that are killing livestock, not just cows. And so this is a depredation on your food system as well. Now, the federal government is moving to try and get, at least maybe ostensibly helping the rancher get rid of the cull, lots and lots of excess birds that are getting bigger and more because they're eating calves and cow baby sheep and all this other stuff. And they're apparently pretty formidable, and they just started doing this 5 years or so ago. You know, the first report here by this story was these farmers are now getting depredation through nature, and the first reports came out of Kansas. Just 5 years ago, which caused me to start thinking, what caused that? And then I remember back what happened to me this spring, and I won't get too far off, but I found it interesting. I'd never seen vultures as low as I had seen them one day. They were right out, not even 15, 20 feet, no, 20-something feet out, doing a really tight circles inside a tree line inside of a pond area. Never seen that low, thinking that maybe there was a dead animal right down in there. And those two got joined by a third, and they moved up to a higher, I guess they needed more space. They moved up a little bit higher, and then another one joined, and it was right above me, probably 30 feet then, going in tight circle. And then another one joined up, and you know, get the idea, well, what are they over me now for? But then they moved on over a little more, and another black vulture showed up. So we get down, and I move around the corner, went around the pond a little bit, standing, I'm looking, and I go out, and I look, and a black vulture comes and lands in a tree. Now, I could hit it with a rock, maybe 40, 50 feet away. Never had this interaction with, I've been out in the country, been out in the forest, been out on fields, never had this happen, that they're that close. Then I notice another vulture land. And I'm thinking, like, am I their meal? Just a thought. Never had it happen. One lands over in a big tree, kind of neat. Opens up its wings because it was hot in the afternoon. Then I turn around and I look and I notice another one long farther away. About more of what they do. They go far away in a tight tree, but on my side of the pond. And I look to the left and I'm looking at that one. Or I thought I was looking at the one that was sitting in the tree. And I heard this big whoosh right above my head. And I looked up and I saw the feet of a black vulture right over my head pulling out. It was pumping its wings to pull out. It just come right over the top, right over me. Right, maybe right on me if it had hit me. And so that was kind of weird. That was kind of neat. I don't get too spooked out about it. It's kind of like, to me, I was listening, wondering what the meaning of all this was. Why does this vulture come onto me like this? And then I read this story. Are we into a time when the vultures are actually going after moving things, living things, not just the carrion? In this report, you're going to find out that they are not afraid of people. And so I'm wondering, just naturally, what's going on in the environment that 5 years ago there start to be the first things that black vultures are attacking live animals. And they're doing fairly well at it. They know exactly what to do, apparently. I guess they have, I didn't know this, but well, I guess you could know, they have razor sharp beaks, and they're very sharp, and they're very talented on how they carve up, and they go right for your eyes, apparently. And so this was interesting only from the standpoint is this is one more thing that the ranchers are now having to deal with to get food out, and the food is being destroyed, and livelihood is being destroyed all at the same time, which is just that the natural is reflecting the unnatural, if you will. And I just didn't think that a black vulture would be that serious a thing. Didn't think too much more than it was very unusual to have a vulture literally above my head. I could have reached up. Had I known, I didn't even see it coming, which is the other. That was what creeped me out. I didn't know it was there until it whooshed. I could tell it did its wing to pull back out. It had come down as low as it wanted to. I could have literally reached up and probably grabbed its feet had I known it was there. But I didn't know it was there until after I heard the whoosh of the wings. And when I looked up, I don't think it was more than 8 feet above my head. What's causing these vultures to be this aggressive? The guy, the farmer that you read in the story says he's run them down because they're not afraid of people. And so, interesting though, I don't maybe get off the point, but that's kind of neat. another potential creepy thing out there. I now realize I'm going to have to pay attention a little bit more to those things. They can be very detrimental. And when I got the wild turkeys coming through, boy, those turkeys, they can plow through a garden faster than you can down a shot of whiskey. I started looking at what they can do beyond the destruction. They're just chickens. They tend to be just giant chickens, but they also carry disease. So there's lots that's involved in interacting with nature that I just find interesting, all happening at the same time to put threats on our food system. But why it all happens at the same time like that has always just intrigued me. Is that a manufactured thing as well? I don't know if I want to go there, but it's just the coincidence is pretty interesting. And so continuing on, the attack upon our food, the attack upon us, its underlying monetary systems, they take away your, even as a producer, they're going to take away your livelihood. You're not going to be able to profit as much. It's going to get tougher and tougher. Your stuff's going to cost more to do whatever you're going to do with those animals. And the internet being connected up with the government already before we got there, and it was military. I told you, as we went on through and said, you know, blockchain, this and that, I said, they're just using you to see what the mistakes are before they lock it in on you. A lot of people didn't, they won't agree with me on this. A lot of people didn't, just don't see what I've said. It's somehow going to be the Wild Wild West forever, and I've said be careful. While it's a Wild Wild West, that's fine, but they're going to lock this down. We now see that transition now, right, where it was a question, oh, we're never, IMF, or we're never going to get into crypto. Now we're watching digital currencies come on. Now we're watching special things come on, and we now find here, just again, old tabs I've had, finally getting to them, relative to this Internet of Battle things, that this was always about that, the spoils of war things, the blood and treasure and all that is you, dead, you controlled, conditioned, clueless, dupable, moving into the economy. The crypto taxes are part of a new infrastructure bill that aims to raise $30 billion from crypto. And this is, I told you they were going to do it. They would just come in and they would just regulate that industry. And they would create some need that it fills, and they would just start to take money. And I think this is the one. I talked about it before, but here's the study, the report that it was that didn't fit into anything I was talking at the time. that it fits better now with the, in my mind, for this identifying for you, it's been known as the battlefield Internet of Things, not just this nice Internet of Things that, oh, how nice we get to communicate and all this, how wonderful life will be and how service, a beneficial life. Remember, this is technocracy, right? This is all about technology. And you'll see that. Even the WHO is coming out showing you about the passports and this ID. We're going to get to that, how all this is working in technology. They've been waiting for this day. The infrastructure bill aims to raise $30 billion from crypto itself. Means that you're going to be integrated. This crypto is being integrated. Blockchain is being integrated. And I found it fascinating. They did this as a security, and they went through the exchanges. But I think it's going to extend out into your so-called coins, which will likely either be integrated or invalidated, one way or the other. And then, again, it'll be privatized. And we're going to see the news here about that, I think, as I go through the next few tabs. But the story, the new infrastructure bill from the federal government actually embraces this whole concepting that crypto will pay for infrastructure that's not even relevant to the crypto, which I find fascinating that they even think they can do that, but they will because no one wants to step up. New bill proposes U.S. Treasury to have full authority over fiat stablecoins. So there's going to be a legalistic connection to some coins, and they're going to call them stablecoins, and they're going to be digital dollars. So they've been denying they're going to do it. Here it is, U.S. Treasury. Remember here, look very carefully. They call it U.S. Treasury. They have long since called it the Treasury since they've invented Treasury. There is no the Treasury. It's this institution called Treasury. Anyway, the bill also calls for U.S. Reserve, Federal Reserve, to be vested with clear authority to issue a digital dollar. The new bill introduced to United States Representative Don Beyer of Virginia has proposed a far-reaching regulatory and legal framework for digital assets across the board. No doubt. And it's going to be in the battlefield of the Internet of Things. It is a prison, military prison, through economy, through control, and through essentially, I think it'll eventually outlaw anything that's not considered a so-called stable coin or not given fiat power. And you're looking at the word right there, it's fiat, right? It's got no value and more than the people that use it, and you're going to be forced to use it unless you have an alternative. And part of what I do with the mining thing is to also explain to you, there's a little anomaly in all this. When they pulled gold from everybody in the 30s, they couldn't pull it from a miner who had a gold mine, because that was his livelihood, that was his labor, that was his work. So everybody else they could take, but they couldn't take the miner. The miner got shafted when they devalued that, right? So that's how they took that out. The point was is that if you're in a certain status and you know about it, you can have places to be. You have defenses that are still honored even in the most tyrannical conditions. But the internet battlefield, the Internet of Things, is blockchain. They're showing you that it's tied to economy. They're going to make fiat digital dollars. It's already coming in and being proposed, and it's working its way through the system. IMF is all over this already, so that's almost the future told. Blockchain explores private stablecoin that could deliver instant, untraceable payments. And if you want to believe that, you're delusional. There's no way in this system you can make untraceable payments where they've already told you that stable coins will be the exclusive power of what? The Federal Reserve. They will outlaw everything they find, and if you have it, you'll be just an enemy combatant, and you'll be dealt with. Anyway, so this is a promotion at the same time I got these other tabs. Oh, there's going to be an untraceable payment system. It'll be great. I wish we could do all that. And until I see that system, it's going to be great, but it's not going to be here. It's going to be controlled, and we're going to be induced and enticed to take on these ideas like there's something private where the military has control of the system by which you're using. Again, if you aren't that ghost in that machine, if you're not findable, then how you end up doing, they call it a trustless system. No, you're going to have to trust anyway. However, somebody brainier than me is going to have to figure out, because I can't see it, but unless you're a ghost in the machine that can't actually trace in real time, remember, this is all real-time stuff, and use the blockchain, which is centralized, and the system itself is centralized, unless you can be the ghost in that machine, like in the Matrix, you live in the sewers of that system so the Centurions can't come and get you. And when they find you out, they're going to be on you. You better have some techniques behind you. Unless you do it like that, it's traceable. And so I just wanted to show you that the promotion of coming out, while they were saying that the government's coming with the infrastructure to make stable coins, federal fiat systems, and then you're going to have a private stable coin, it can't possibly be reality. Just like people couldn't see how the non-centralized so-called Bitcoin could ever be controlled by the government. I don't know if they have to control it. They're going to adopt it, and that's what the other problem is. I think people don't appreciate that problem. They just outlaw it. And if they find you with it, and they'll have hordes of people to do this, hunt you down, you're going to get caught up. You're going to be like that. I heard that guy, the French activist, got caught up through proton mail when we find out they have the IP address of the guy. And so the Swiss government gave to the French government the proton mail demand for the IP address. And I don't know why the uproar. I don't know of any email where the ISP doesn't have your IP address anyway. And if I could figure out a different way, and I may have to consider that, I wouldn't be using email. But it's a way that we have to communicate now. It's probably the most efficient way I can do things right now to help people. And I don't do anything illegal, so it doesn't matter. But my problem is I don't want the military, if you will, these people that have all the time in the world to scrutinize this stuff, to key in on someone who may have an idea for people and to help them and interfere with that. Not that I'm worried about doing anything. It's that I don't want the interference. And I've seen evidence, and I've told you about this in the past, where we got a little bit too open, and pretty soon I'm seeing the government do things before we got there to circumvent that very point, and we had to come up with something quick in order to change it to keep them off balance. And I come up with stuff that's not normal in most normal people's ideas for being done, so when they went that extreme to go try to do to counter us before we got there, I said, wait a minute, they're looking at us somewhere. Someone on this conversation is either part of it, part of them, or someone's been intercepting communications. And so getting back to the economy, the vaccine policy, you're getting into the battlefield of the Internet of Things, as we see now tabs you can read all about how they know it, but you'll see a video there too where they explain about this. Some academic talking about it. We now move into, and I said they're going to bring and privatize this blockchain technology for payments and things, and we have MasterCard chooses 7 crypto startups for StartPath Accelerator. International, listen carefully to the scope, international payment giant MasterCard, what I told you about the word master here, and what they're going to do with this, and what they have planned to do with it, the MasterCard, are you the master, if you're the prisoner? The slave? No. Subject to their economic policy? Are you the master? No. Considered in debt? Are you the master? No. No debtor is ever a master. And so, MasterCard continues focusing on digital asset industry by welcoming a batch of major cryptocurrency startups in its FinTech Accelerator. Again, these tabs are months and months and months old for those of you that have read about this. I'm finally getting to it in the context I think it fits best in a global military operation and a public-private partnershiping, which seems to be foreign but is actually run by the military and adopted by all countries and militaries. They're all kind of in on this. Why? Because they get to control their populations better. The company announced Tuesday a new startup engagement program, MasterCard StartPath, as an accelerator program to fintech startups aiming to support companies working with digital assets, cryptocurrency, and blockchain technology. And as I read that, that's not even news. I told you about this connection years and years and years ago. They're now bringing it together. They'll tell you who they are. They're non-fungible tokens, these NFTs, whatever they want to call them. This is now the private sector coming together, and they're going to be integrated with your global payment systems. And they're already on contract about this. And they're going to be consistent with that consideration. They'll start to focus on these blockchain infrastructures and who's doing it are going to be the preferred companies you'll have to go through or be, I guess, considered an attacking a threat to the national security and be attacked by the military. Just like they're attacking the agriculture, just like they're attacking the oil, under color that someone's doing it from outside. And we want to see now nations, I told you this was coming, I told you that they were going to get digital currencies, this is, they were denying it all this time, and we give the first faller has to do with the first, with a situation with the president and his son, the same country, I couldn't disregard this coincidence, Ukraine's central bank now officially allowed to issue digital currency. Master, not a slave. They're allowed. They're not the master. But they get to use digital currency for whom? Their subjects, called citizens. Ukraine's newly signed law of payment services requires close cooperation between National Bank of Ukraine and private startups in payment market. In the payment market, Ukrainian government is moving forward in its central bank digital currency, CBDC. Talked about this, those four letters a couple years ago. Plans as the National Bank of Ukraine is now officially authorized to issue digital currency. If some of you thought this blockchain wasn't going to be adopted and brought in and going to be, again, they're not going to have a competitor for this, so you're going to be locked into that. Anybody else likely is going to be a threat to the, again, economy is a threat to national security. So you're going to be on the outs pretty quickly. And that's okay. You can decide to do that, but just understand the game you're starting to play and where this thing was always going is my important, and that the government military is already on this, has been ahead of it. And so now we move into where that's the money, that's what's going on, that's the surface, that's the Internet of Things, as we move blockchain and crypto technology into control of the government, the treasuries, so-called treasuries, around the world. You start hearing there's the government of Ukraine has no power here. They're subject to somebody else. This is that debtor not a master be type stuff. You're not a master, which means that you deal in these mediums, spirits, mediums, you're going to be subject at some level. And so I don't know what to say. That's a kind of a fluid type of an idea and mostly intangible to most people. But at any rate, moving on here now, what we see is I want to integrate what they've been doing, the mandatory vaccines and the fact the military is involved in those vaccines, the fact that they're a company's product, and then the fact of the implementation of an order of government that you see now, I think it was, what is it, Australia admitted the mitigation measures are for the in the new world order of things. A proponent happens to be an official proponent of this so-called new world order of things. They're coming out to tell you, this is what it's been about. An article, leohoman.com. I've pulled up a couple of articles from that website now here in the last few weeks. Interesting insights on what's going on. The rising biomedical security state is determined to use COVID to reduce every human being to a QR code. I guess I like it, this website, because that's what I've been telling you. They're going to need your phone. You're going to have that phone. That's how they're going to communicate. And it's going to be about putting a QR code on you. So I wanted you to hear about a little bit about this in this battlefield Internet of Things. And the QR code. Remember, that's that code. What is it? Is it version 6? Version 40? Very, very small dots. If you look just right, you'll depending on your status and your social credit, you'll either see a little dragon holding a bunch of balloons, or you're going to see the terror that this is if you hold your eyes just right. They call it a two-dimensional code, but if you hold your eyes just right, you can peer into what this thing really is and see the truth. Remember those posters. So what's a QR code? Just quickly. You can go read about them. Everyone thinks, oh, there's these, oh, they're cute little cards. Oh, they're kind of handy. And well, yeah, they're going to be, everything's really going to be handy. Handy in your hand in a phone. And they're making, for those of us without phones, they're making printouts, okay? So that you won't even, how do you read this? How do you even understand? What's the disclosure to you through these codes on top of it? But you're going to be handed a printout, which will supposedly be whatever that is for you. The QR code system was invented in 1994 by Masahiro Hara from the Japanese company DensoWave. The initial design was influenced by the black and white pieces of a Go board. Its purpose was to track vehicles during manufacturing. Remember I talked to you about human capital, you're a vehicle for the government, and you're human capital, okay? Track vehicles during manufacturing. Manufacturing what? During this updating of your genetic ID, folks. They're manufacturing something as well. I can read a lot of this into here. You may not want to do it that way. That's how I read, just to have another component to what I'm thinking about is a potential possibility. But the track vehicles during manufacturing, it was designed to allow high-speed component scanning. High-speed, real-time, folks. QR codes are now used in a much broader context, including both commercial tracking applications and convenience-oriented applications aimed at mobile phone users. So there's only two uses here. Your convenience to be a commercially tracked product. And how do I get that? It says that they're connected here to a uniform resource identifier, which is actually a barcode. Okay? And it's got a whole interesting thing, UPC barcodes. Let's go look real quick over those, just to see quickly. Barcode, and I thought about bar association code. Interesting. Maybe the way they control things. Not that they're the pinnacle of this, but there it is, barcode. What that started out, those little barcodes, the QR codes are matrixed. This is living in the matrixed barcode system of the little dot things. They're actually broke down bars and patterns. The barcode symbology used for tracking trade items. So this system is in commerce for tracking trade items, which you can participate in. And so again, you are the product. They're tracking you as the product. As we understand, like the comment, I don't know what it is. If you are getting something free, maybe you are the product. Okay, you're getting a free vaccine, and they have instantaneous responses. You know that there's a coding that can go on that they can put on you with these injections that are needleless now. Microsoft has that patent, I believe. They also have the protein data folding that they can do to put data inside protein. But these QR codes have four layers to them, and there's actually one that can multiply that capacity if they go to colors. And so they have a large capacity they can use in these simple little QR codes that everyone's starting to use. Literally, you read about QR codes, half of the population have used, male population, it was over half, have used QR codes to buy something. So this is like people just wanting to get, that's why I see 50% of the population getting injections, getting the jab. That's probably the half that use QR codes for something. Okay, I don't have proof of that. Just a thought. The coincident numbers. So QR codes are barcodes. Barcodes are commerce. Commerce for tracking. And you go back through and you look at the QR code down far enough, and it goes through all kinds of different uses, very fascinating uses, even to the point of your gravestone, cradle to grave. They talk about all kinds of uses, loyalty programs. Are you living in China and your loyalty program? No, they got you to do that through Safeway or all your loyalty cards when you go buying stuff. You're a consumer. That's another type of commerce entity inside that system. You are the product. And you have loyalty programs, which governments use the word loyalty just a little bit different. Are you loyal? Or are you an enemy combatant? Are you a threat to national security? Serialized QR codes are fascinating. They are used for branding, brands, and governments to let consumers, retailers, and distributors verify the authenticity of the products and help with the detecting of counterfeit products. Screamed jab. And now you start to see each company having a jab, having its own proprietary right, and you will likely have to have that in order for a doctor to understand how to treat you, because there may be interactions that either one doesn't necessarily utilize quite right that you're going to have to be plugged into. Remember those booster updates. However, the security level of the regular QR code is limited, since QR codes printed on original products are easily reproduced or on fake products. Right, so if you look carefully, they say they limit the security risk. There's nothing that stops the security risk of having wrong information placed on these as well. So interesting, go down, it's product tracing. Consider you the product. Consider that jab the product. Consider anything they can put on this anymore with the QR code in your phone becomes that carrier. And then they mention here, down under QR code on the wiki, COVID-19 pandemic. So all this discussion you'll see in that article that I talked just before, where they talk about a QR code And they talk about the integration on the battlefield of the Internet of Things here. It reduces itself down to this little bitty code that is being used by the technocrats and now documented in their literature to be relative to the COVID-19 pandemic, where they talk to you about it, its need was because it created a touchless system. Right? Just put up the cameras now start doing their recognition. The AI, if you will, starts to recognize things and do things. And you don't have that touchless system, you aren't going to be able to have certain things available to you. That you live in the world they want for you. And so we have here, and just an example, in several Australian states, patrons are required to scan QR codes at shops, clubs, supermarkets, and other service and retail establishments to enter the insist on entry to assist contract tracing. Singapore, Taiwan, and United Kingdom and New Zealand use similar systems. It's already in play, folks. These QR codes, innocent little QR codes. There. So you can see how this is all integrated. You can see the use of this is moving right directly along the lines that I've been telling you. It's within two powers of the government that's exclusive to the government, in the United States at least. Commerce. Well, every government's got its protection on its own economy and stuff. So that's a national security issue. It's the worst thing you can be up against to defend. So you got to have a different thought about how you go after, how do you fight an assertion of national security. I only think the thing that you can do is assert fraud. Because you are against the rest. And you are not in a position to make those determinations over what is best for the rest. But here, UPC, they're bringing it up. The one article talks about it. It's all about the technocracy. It's how to get your data into one spot. It's how to give you the symbols reading that are machine read, not you. You and I can't read it. We don't have a clue. It's done in layers, so it's even multiply masked and for multiple purposes. They can go to color to expand the amount of data. And then I can only say, well, it looked like it can be hacked. I hope it's right. Is the system they want to put you in on. And then remember this digital currency payment system, MasterCard type stuff, and the affiliates to that are your social credit and where you're going to spend your money and how, or whether you'll spend your money. And all of this is done instead of what? Just letting your immune system work. Instead of what? The fraud in the first place. And I guess it's up to us to choose. We can be quiet or we can start, even if we have to wear a mask, tell our employer, no, I've got a problem. I have a problem with this, but here, how do you have a right to continue this? I think this is an ethical problem to start with, if not a legal problem. We really need to discuss it. And if you've got a decent employer, maybe they're willing to do that. If not, maybe you should move. Maybe you should change your job. Find a bunch of people that are going to do better. So the other thing is when we move into how do we look for things that aren't going to hurt us? We have to keep studying and keep finding out what's going on relative to this fraud, COVID fraud, this thing that they brought up. It's in a title. If you didn't know there was COVID-19 attached to flu-like symptoms would not have been identified as a killer. It would be just a thing that we've always had because someone with flu-like symptoms can die. I've told you about at least one of my situations. I had flu-like symptoms for 2 weeks. Had I not got the Western medicine of antibiotics, I would not be here today. So there's a place for everything at some point. But it all has its place. And this is, again, relative to a doctor. I didn't have a public health authority come in and say, oh, you have to do this. No, I had a doctor who was concerned. He couldn't figure it out. He left me over 20, 30 minutes. Tearing through his books. He brought two of them in when he got done. I think I got it. Never seen quite what I had before. Lucky I had a guy who cared for me. Not some bureaucrat out there. Anyway, moving on. What don't work? Outpatients with COVID-19 experience no significant benefit from COVID-19 convalescent plasma. So don't go there. If you have been talking to a doctor and they say we might consider that, maybe the doctor doesn't know enough. Maybe you should find someone else. But I think now there's more doctors coming on that say, we'll help you. And I think medicine can help right now in the interim that you don't even have to live close. just make connection to doctors that actually care, understand some of the stuff. And if you want to go medical exemption, and if they can do it, give you the medical exemption or have them direct you to a doctor within your state that is empathetic and knowledgeable to give you the medical if you don't want to do a religious conviction affidavit. Now, we move on to what's going on. The Army people, the people in the Army, I told you, do have an exemption for a religious conviction exemption, but it's very difficult. You've got to be persistent. There, you do apparently have to profess your faith before they'll give it to you. I didn't see that in the state codes that I was looking at for the other ones. It's just that if you have a religious conviction that prohibits things, then that's all that they need to know as far as the state's concerned, because it's between you and the doctor, actually. They aren't telling you that, but that's really where it goes. Then I have another link on TikTok, of all things. Never been on TikTok until I saw this, and I think I got this out of the RLM chat weeks ago, where an Army doctor is saying that there's Army people, personnel dying over the vaccine. And so I don't have more to say on that. It's just a link for you to see. If you're in the military, maybe you really seriously consider protecting yourself and find any way to do that. Because I don't know, under an attitude of a president that has no jurisdiction to say that you will have a mandatory this or that, and it has death as a consequence, can't necessarily be a good place and a good thing that you want to just let happen to you. You just don't know, I guess, is the other thing. See, to me, how could I know? And in particular, I told you, I got someone in my family that they, despite what I told them, got the shot, and one of them got the symptoms that were told in the documents to be a side effect. Not cool. What do I do now? I just watch. There's nothing more I can do. So there's consequences to our decisions, and we have to own up to them. And if we allow, again, the encroachment of unethical things, I don't know how the world looks better than unethical in the future. We certainly are going to have no critical thinkers in the future, and we're going to have no ethics in the future. That's been clearly shown that they're getting rid of professors, that's what they're insisting that they're doing. And because they did that, they're out relative to these things. And then we hear something from the officials late. CDC finally releases death rates of kids hospitalized with COVID. The CDC quietly updated its report on the number of kids under 18 who have died from the coronavirus. The point is, there were 8 kids that have died. In other words, there is no threat, actually, relatively, because we don't know, again, the comorbidities of a little one as well. We don't know the variants either. But we don't know the other conditions. We don't know how many vaccines they had to make them susceptible, but only 8 died. 8 did die. I didn't like hearing that. That's the other problem. Attributed to the flu-like symptoms. That's another problem. But we lost 8 little ones, but that's all. So again, this coronavirus, so-called, is not a threat, just like it's been said. And the CDC is dragging its feet before it's going to tell you that. And this is the other omission, right? They're not moving quickly to give anybody any information. Another type of deceit, the fraud by omission, even though it sounds good on the surface. Tucson pauses COVID-19 vaccine mandate after an Arizona Attorney General, deems it illegal. Vaccine mandate is deemed illegal by the Arizona Attorney General. What's the fraud by omission there, folks? The Tucson pauses COVID-19 vaccine mandate after Arizona Attorney General deems it illegal is that the Attorney General didn't deem the COVID fraud illegal. And that's the Bar Association, one of the head law officer, your solicitor, so-called, the law officer in that state. So we think, oh, great, there's not going to be a vaccine mandate. Tucson can pull it back. Attorney General, they don't want to go against the legal advice of the head law officer of the state. What didn't he do? He didn't call the whole thing a fraud. He's in on it. Why? I don't know. Probably the money, right? Moving on. What do I do here with all this stuff? The story of ivermectin. Interesting little video. I'll give you a link. You can see this one thing. Again, every medicine has its purpose. This is not to say it's the only thing. I am really intrigued over the prophylactic nature of this, and it really only answers my belief that this is a chemical weapon attack And there is no natural thing to this at all, at all. It's all been a ruse to get us to get jabs, to get the jabdemic going, and we're dealing with a chemical attack, even from a biological response. That ivermectin may have a role. I want to give you the link, story of ivermectin, very interesting things to listen for. Take your notes. And then, so they're going to make it easier. They know these injections are really vile to people. They got to get this stuff in you, a pill to treat COVID-19. Pfizer takes the next step in a study of Tamiflu-like drug. Well, that's just an antiviral that what? Well, we find ivermectin's an antiviral. We found a hydroxychloroquine's an antiviral. Vitamin D's an antiviral. Vitamin C's antiviral. Well, on and on, right? No, but see, the point is that the only distinction is that their medicines today are not generic medicines, and they've got a monopolized business, don't they? Again, the profit. The business of doing business to harm you. Pharma. Harma. The P's are silent. And here we are, the professor, one of the professors I mentioned, talked out about this coming, and he gets fired. And his statement was, I'm teaching you critical thought. He's a law professor, folks. He didn't do what the other law professor did, so I find that interesting. I'd like to actually talk to him. This might be a good guy to talk to. I don't know. But so, Tamiflu-like drug? No, they're trying to make a new drug. If an antiviral works, why aren't the others authorized for this? It's all about the money, right? The economy, stupid. Law professor refuses to mask up or get a jab. This is Professor David K. Clements, I think. And he has a video you can watch. He goes through the lineage. What I found fascinating, again, not too much of a criticism because he's a fighter here. He's resisting pretty big, but why, as a law professor, didn't he go through to the communicable disease authority failure before worried about being to do this? And why didn't, as a law professor, he at least did what the other law professor did, or did what I'm saying, to assert that he has not been declared a risk, or that there's not the first medical report to give the health authority with the jurisdiction, the authority, to allow the university to do that? And again, we're working on wrongful termination. I'll go through quickly here. Cybernetic social systems engineering and the use of nanoparticles and frequency to turn living beings into substrates for remote computation. I want to get finally to this tab. This is another Allison McDowell talking on, I think it's a Twitter, for 2.5 minutes or so about this interconnection of the Internet of Things, this chemistry, your future, graphene, and all these things as showing you these are synthetic, not natural, and what they're doing to us in this technocratic future. We are now allowing because we don't respond correctly. And it does seem overwhelming how to respond, but I think I'm harsh. You know, I put out an affidavit that a bar association, the only criticism he had was that it was harsh against your destruction of your life. I mentioned some things out of the law that seemed to be, I guess, harsh to them. And this is also, I want to throw in quickly here, Michigan man warns of there's a hell coming over school mask mandate. My criticism of that, he needed to set the foundation of the violation of the officials in the commission and not following the communicable disease law or their communicable health officials, which were causing irreparable harms, and that people were noticing. And if there's a futility of their duty and the dereliction of their duty, there is opinion that hell will be there to be paid by them. Would be better than to just say, we're coming after you, and then kind of denying you said that. Be careful on how you assert what we're doing. I gave you a link to that so you can see the entirety of what they say. I agree with the energy. I don't agree with the approach because we're sitting in an occupied state right now. And I think that'll be it for today. Thank you, Grimner. I hope you get better. Thank you for coming online and letting us know a little bit of what's going on. Rest up and do what you need to do is all I can say. Get better incrementally. Think about how to focus on that. Hopefully we'll hear from you soon. And all the syndicators of the broadcast, thank you very much. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony, Till next time, journey with purpose.
A can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.